Blog Talk Radio.
And I'm your host, Paul Gant, alongside Jeremy Espion. For the next hour, we will be talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your ideas, all your opinions, and all your beliefs. And, of course, you will get a heavy dose of our opinion. If you have an opinion, the number to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. And you can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pgant. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgant. And you can send email messages to the show at goforit.gant@gmail.com. That's goforit.gant@gmail.com. Jeremy?
Paul?
How you feeling?
Another day, another couple of hours spent on restaurant.com.
Well, you're looking for restaurants for me?
You know, I'm keeping myself abreast of current moves.
So I appreciate that you're looking for restaurants for me. It's very helpful and very appreciated. But today we're going to be joined by athletes turned entertainers. And we're going to be joined by Jared Bunch, former Giants fullback, played four seasons in the league. He's appeared on a lot of things. He was actually in Only in America, the Don King story, which aired on HBO. He played George Foreman. He had some moments in New York Undercover, The Best Man, Entourage. And so he's been around in terms of acting on various shows. So should be good to get his insights, see what's going on with him, see if he has any new projects or anything of that nature. We're also going to be joined by Darnarian McCants, a former Eagle, former Redskins star, wide out. He is another guy who went from athlete to entertainer. He's a guy who dropped an album in 2007. And a guy should be very interesting to see what's going on with him and see if he has anything new or anything that he's working on music-wise or anything. The guy can actually draw and actually done a little modeling. So it should be good to get the insight of those guys and kind of see what's going on with them and you know, just see what happens when you make that transition and how hard it is to transition. Or it may be pretty easy because if you look at it, they're already on the big stage if you look at the NFL football field. So they're already on the big stage. So I guess it's just a kind of, in some respect, could be a seamless transition in a lot of ways. So it should be interesting to get their thoughts and their insight on what's going on. And we talked about a little bit on Monday's show, but it is official. Tiger and Elin Nordegren, his ex-wife, they are officially divorced. Elin apparently told People magazine that, "I've been through hell. It's hard to think you have this life, and then all of a sudden, was it a lie? Your struggles because it wasn't real. But I survived. It was hard, but it didn't kill me." Those are the words of Elin.
So, Paul, for the first time in your life, will you be buying the People magazine this week?
Maybe. Maybe not. I don't know. I don't know.
This has been a big part of your life. You know,
you're consumed with a man and a woman's marriage and after marriage.
I mean, it's not consumed, but it was a big story for a long time there. And she actually fought to get her restored her maiden name. So it was Elin Nordegren, not Elin Woods, as she was once referred to when she was the wife of Tiger Woods. But, I mean, it was an interesting story. And it was an interesting story because it was kind of like a hero had betrayed us in some respect. And he changed. And what we thought he was is not who he was. But I mean, at the end of the day,
But Paul, you knew him. you knew who Tiger Woods was as an athlete? We didn't know who he was when he was an athlete, not an athlete. Again, the problem is, let's keep it real, let's be honest, because the guy made a commercial, because the guy swung a golf club and smiled, everyone believed what they wanted to believe. No one knew Tiger Woods. And if we're now believing Elin, why? Because she has a smile and because she's being paid by not just Tiger Woods now, by People Magazine, we're going to believe what she says? You're going to really believe that she didn't know that her husband...
Because it was my opinion that she knew what was going on. She just gave a blind eye to it for the simple
but
fact.
But that's not what she said to People Magazine. You're going to make...
That's what I believe, and no matter what she says... I don't believe her. So she can say all she wants to say, but I don't believe it. So, you know, I don't believe what she's saying. And in a lot of ways, you know, it's just a part of the image that was being portrayed on both sides in a lot of ways. On both sides.
Well, I mean, I find it, like, I find it more distasteful and disruptive. I mean, I think it's a joke that I'm not picking on you, anyone is going to come around or sit around and say, again, like, you know, that we thought we knew, even Elin, we thought we knew Tiger Woods. Well, obviously, even if she says that, she didn't know her. I mean, and she thought that their marriage was this, and their marriage, where was she? I mean, how is a man that you're married to not just having an affair, but how is he having, like, it was a serial affair. Where is she? I mean, how do you come out in People Magazine and say that and expect me to have any empathy for you? You have to be out of your mind. I don't have any empathy for you. Come on, Paul. Paul, I mean, really.
I'm telling you, I agree with you.
I'm just checking.
I mean, in a lot of ways, I mean, it was a celebrity marriage, and that's what happens with these celebrity marriages. And it is what it is. I mean, you knew what you signed up for. She signed up for it.
By the way, it wasn't at all, due respect. How sorry do I feel for a woman who comes away with this $100 million richer? I mean, I get sickened by the whole notion that I have to feel sorry for someone that just inherited
the kingdom.
No one's asking you to feel sorry for her. She is, Paul. She's not only asking us, she's begging us to feel sorry for her.
She'll be fine. And all the money that she has, she'll be fine. She's a good-looking woman. She should be able to pick back up. With Tiger's millions and find somebody new. So she should be fine. She's a good-looking woman. She shouldn't have any problems finding anybody at this point. And I'd be surprised if she did have any problems. Like I said, good-looking woman. So, she shouldn't have any problems whatsoever. But, I mean, you're right. I mean, for us to have a level of sympathy for it's kind of reasonable in a lot of ways and something I'm – just don't have and something I won't have, but you know you never like to see marriages fail, but it kind of in some respect in terms of celebrity marriages these things happen in some respect and maybe the nature of the beast, unfortunately. And even in regular people, normal people like you and I mean marriages fail 50% of the time, so I mean it's hard for regular people. Imagine if you're a celebrity. So in terms of sympathy,
I felt as everything she said in the headlines that are going to certainly come out in the next couple of days. I mean, it's like you want to talk about an attention whore. Now you kept yourself silent from the whole. You kept yourself silent till the business transaction came out, and then you want to come out and start bashing this guy. I mean,
anybody. What are you talking about?
No. I'm talking about Elin, Paul. She kept her mouth shut until she made her money. And now you want me to believe everything you say after you got paid, not before? This woman strategically should be running a Fortune 500 company because she'd take them all the way to the top.
Well, with the money that she will be having, maybe she has the opportunity to buy one, if not start one. So... good luck to her in that situation. I mean, it makes me wish my name was Woods or Nordigan for that matter, all the money that she's raking in from this divorce. So, you're Elin Nordigan, life is good again. Life is good again. Life always been good, but life may have just gotten a little better. You got rid of that situation and you just walked into to lots and lots and lots of money. Elin just does hit the jackpot, so to speak. She got her lucky lottery ticket.
Yeah.
And now that she got it and she cashed it and everything is good, it's time to talk a little bit. Trying to talk about it, and that's what she's doing now, and that's what she did in People Magazine, and maybe I'll check it out, maybe I won't.
But, we know, Paul. If it costs money, you ain't buying it. You got dinner to pay for.
You're right. You're probably right. You're probably right. You know, there also has been talk that, switching gears now to the NFL real quick, Darrelle Revis, there was talk that a deal was imminent between him and the Jets now. There's talk that that it's not as close as we were led to believe. And there was talk that, that they would announce on Hard Knocks tonight that Revis has signed his contract. But again, none of that, all that was refuted by the people of HBO and NFL Films. So, well, you know, so at this point, it's still a situation where the guy is still unsigned and they're still moving towards trying to get him signed up. And
well, the one thing, Paul, we know is, listen, if they're talking about him signing,
it's going to be hard for both parties to talk about it and it not be, I mean, almost imminent. And you get the sense that it's certainly around the corner. And I think for both parties, it's staying, I hate to use this term, vigilant, but recognizing that, you know, it'll happen. It's meant to happen.
It's got to happen. If you're the Jets, it's got to happen. It definitely has to happen if you want to go to the Super Bowl like you say you want to go to and that you said you're serious about winning and getting there. Again, as my opinion and my belief is I don't trust Mark Sanchez. He didn't make enough plays when he was. Last year he didn't make enough plays, and I don't think he'll make enough plays this year. But,
well,
you know,
he's O'Donovan, Paul.
So I don't think he'll make the plays. We're now joined by former football player and actor, Jarrett Bunch. Jarrett?
Yes, that's me.
How are you, sir?
Good, how are you doing?
Pretty good, pretty good. Well, Jarrett, you're a guy now. Kind of start with your career. You came out of Michigan. You were a 27th pick of the Giants. And I was reading somewhere where you said being drafted was your favorite moment of your career. Why was that?
Well, you know, listen, you start off in college, you go to college, you're struggling as far as finances go. You're working pretty much two full-time jobs and being a student and playing a Division I sport in football. And you're struggling, man, and then you're drafted, and that day, your whole life changes. You know, you have financial freedom, you have, you know, you're an adult, you have a lot of things. You don't have to worry about what you're going to eat that night, you know, or where you're going to get pizza cards from. So it changed just that quick.
And the money was plentiful for you. And looking back at your Giants career, I mean, you had a promising second season. You had 500 yards rushing. You averaged over 4 yards per carry. At that point, did you feel like your career was going on the up and up, wasn't on the up and up at that point?
Oh, there's no question it was on the up and up. That year, I was the Giants' offensive player of the year. It was actually 4.8 yards a carry, and that's from the fullback position. And Rodney Hampton was the tailback at the time, and he rushed for 1,400 yards. And the Giants as a whole, we led the league in rushing. And so we had, you know, Rodney was drafted in the first round, the year before I was, and I was drafted in the first round. So we had two first-round running backs in the same running tandem, and we led the league in rushing. So I was well on my way. You know, I was doing good. I was doing good.
Now the regime changed. You were drafted by Bill Parcells. Ray Hanley left lasted 2 years. Dan Reeves came in. Not a guy who utilized the fullback position a lot. And going into training camp in 1993, you tore your MCL, and eventually you would have surgery in the off season on your knee and in your foot. And at that point, did you feel like maybe you had to start thinking about life after football, or at that point you thought maybe you could still come on back?
No, I always thought that I was going to be able to play, and I think that was one of the problems that I had was not really preparing as much as I could have for after football. I, you know, like you said, the injury happened in training camp of 93, and the first week, it was the first scrimmage, and I tore MCL, and I tore a muscle called the retinaculum that holds the kneecap in place. And one of those things that you usually you don't have to get surgery for. You don't have to throw it back. But the problem was being out for 5 weeks, 6 weeks, and then coming back with it not being sewn back down. It runs the risk of never being in the right place. And that's what happened. So going the rest of the season about 60% and then getting surgery after the after the season, all of the damage was done from the new kneecap not being in place. So even when they put it back in place, all the cartilage and everything that had eroded because of being off track was the problem. So it's back in place, but no cushion in between. And coming back to play the following year, you think, you know, everything's set up right. But it was one of those things that you practice one day, that night it's your knee's like a balloon. And it was just a cycle, vicious cycle, and then it just never went down.
Well, Jared, an interesting question because you kind of piqued my curiosity on the science of this. Is this something where, I guess the technology in 1993 as opposed to, let's say, now, would this have made a difference for you had you been injured this year?
I think, you know, the technology and medicine has come so far now. They'll probably would have done something different. Things have tried, you know, new techniques are done and everything else, and microfracture surgery and all these other things that take place. There are things that are leaps and bounds from 1993. And, you know, when you say it like that, it's 17 years ago.
Well, that's why I say that. It's important. I think it's very important to kind of, like, as you had mentioned, you come into the season, and Paul and I are from Philadelphia. Certainly remember the 93 Giant teams, and they were very well known. And I think at that, like you said, 17 years ago, even though the NFL was still as prominent, it from a medical science standpoint and from a technology standpoint, the game has dramatically changed.
Yeah. I think if that same thing happens today, there are certain things that they could do. You know, that was not available back then. And then there's a certain things that they can try, you know, that wasn't available back then. But still, the fact that I didn't get the surgery at the time of the injury, it still may not happen now. Because it's one of those things that, you know, there are players now that have torn MCLs and they don't get surgery. You know, it's one of those things that they it's not necessary that you have to have surgery. But there is a possibility that there will be a problem going forward, but it's not 100% that there won't. So it's, you know, it's one of those toss-ups. That, in that aspect, I don't think anything would have been different, but there's something that they could do now after the fact. Okay, it needed surgery. There's an option for a different. At the time, there was two different surgeries that I could have had. One would have put me out for the year. At that second, the surgery I had in 1994 was called a lateral release, where they just cut the outside muscle, it slides back into place. The other one would be called realignment, which that puts you out for a year, where they actually take your kneecap, put it back in place, sew it back down, give you one of those big cuts, you know, down your leg, and that put me out for a year. So they didn't want to do that one, and so they opted for the scope and the lateral release, and it just wasn't enough. But we moved on.
After the Giants, you tried to catch on in other places. It didn't work out for you in that respect. And at that point, you're figuring out, did it become evident for you that – when did it become evident that it was time to think about something else?
Well, the reason why it didn't work out for me was because when I came back to the Giants and I didn't pass the physical – I didn't pass the physical to sign my next contract with the Giants. They put me on what's called physically unable to perform list.
Mm-hmm.
And after the final cut, then the Giants released me. Now, I didn't know that they were going to release me, and they could have told me, you know, I didn't know. They just had me on physically unable to perform list, and I was with the trainers all the time. When I was released, I still was not 100%, you know, the knee still wasn't 100%. But the following week, there was Los Angeles Raiders were playing someone, and Napoleon Kaufman.
Kaufman, yeah.
Yeah. He got into he got tackled and he tore his ACL.
Oh, that gruesome injury.
That gruesome injury. And the Raiders needed a fullback, period. So they knew I was not ready, but they brought me in, signed me like the next day. And for 3 weeks, all I had to do was just, you know, try to rehab. I was only rehabbing. That's it. And then after the 3 weeks, I was to try to get reevaluated to see how it was. So I was on there for 3 weeks. Just rehabbing, started to practice with the team after 3 weeks, and it was evident that it wasn't going to work. And then I was released like 3-4 weeks later. So that's what happened, is that they brought me because they needed someone to be ready to play right away, because they had their starting fullback was out, and they needed someone, you know, that could have somebody for a short period of time, and then a regular starter, which would have been me. And what happened is the knee just it never came around. I never could run as fast as I could used to. I couldn't cut. And that was it.
But the interesting thing is, and you say that the knee comes around, it's an interesting moving past football. You go right from a nice football career into, basically what is also the beginning of MMA, and you have a nice established career inside the ring. It's just interesting to see the dynamic between different sports, how you can't play football, but you're certainly able to perform at another professional level.
Yeah, I think what that is number one, there have been years in between, you know, and I never let myself get out of shape. I've always trained. And it was interesting that the fact that I got into martial arts was the last, in 1994, I had 4 surgeries. And after the last surgery that I had, I went to a martial arts instructor who was basically, he's just a guy that heals people. You know, he gives you all different kinds of exercises to do to strengthen your body and get yourself back in line and line your whole body, your muscles, and get them all, you know, working the way they're supposed to work. And that's how I got into martial arts. And the fact that I was doing that for years, I received a phone call when MMA started getting big that another former NFL player was looking for a fight. And he had been training. So I've been doing this training, you know, for my body for all this time. So I was like, of course, I'll fight him, yeah. And I knew who it was. I was like, yeah, definitely, I'll fight him. I know I can beat him. But I didn't know that he knew. I didn't know that he did jiu-jitsu. And I ended up losing that fight. And after I lost the fight, I said, okay, what is this jiu-jitsu stuff? And then I started training jiu-jitsu. And that's how I started doing the jiu-jitsu. And so now I've won the world championship in jiu-jitsu multiple times. I've done a lot of things, but that's in jiu-jitsu. But MMA, mixed martial arts, which is punching, kicking, you know, everything, that was the only fight that I did. But in jiu-jitsu, I've been doing it for years now.
Now, after your football career, you decided that you wanted to get into acting. What made you want to become an actor?
I was playing with the Raiders in Los Angeles, and the opportunity was here. If you notice most athletes that have a career in acting, they come from Los Angeles because here is the entertainment capital of the world, and there's a lot of opportunity for players to, you know, meet with producers, audition for parts, see things that they like, and try to get into it. And when I was introduced to it, I said, wow. And I decided to go the route of I went and enrolled in school. So when I moved back to New York, I was in school, acting school, for about 2 years. And I was with the Harlem Drama Workshop for about 2 years. And I started auditioning for commercials, and I kept booking commercials. And then I started booking movies. And my first big movie part was The Don King Story, which I played George Foreman. And
talk about that role, because that was kind of your big break there.
That was my big break. That was the first big movie that I did, and it was a leading role, and it was somebody that everyone knows, and George Foreman, and it was when he was the heavyweight champion of the world, and how he became the heavyweight champion, and how he lost it, and what happened afterwards, everything else, and the fact that I auditioned for that was one of the things that when I auditioned, I went in and auditioned, and I told them, if I don't get this, then I'm going to have to start looking for something else to do, because the fact was I was getting auditions for things but being turned down because everyone thought that, oh, he's a football player or he's an athlete, he's not an actor. And I'm saying, okay, here's an opportunity for me to audition for an athlete. And so I should be what everyone's talking about. And when I actually was called in to audition for it, and then a week later they flew me, I was still living in New York. They flew me out to California, and I met with the director and then the executive producer. And then the executive producer knew me from the Giants.
Right.
I thought that was going to be a good thing. It was a bad thing. It was a bad thing. He and the director liked me. He wanted me. The executive producer said, this guy is a football player. I know him from, he doesn't he have to be in camp? Isn't he going to be, won't he miss shooting or whatever? Like, no, he doesn't play anymore. It's like, no, I think he still plays. And it was like one of those discussions. And so they had to clear that I was no longer, in NFL. I never no longer played football. And I hadn't any big roles. So he was like, can he act? I see he might be good in audition, but, I'm nervous. I don't want to put up all this money for this movie, and then we have to get somebody else because this guy starts off and he can't finish. And
right.
What happened is that once I got on the set and he saw it, he just fell in love with it. And after we finished shooting, when they finished the whole shooting, which was 6 weeks, he came up to me and he said, I want to apologize because when we first called and they wanted me to sign you, I didn't want to sign you because I thought you were a football player, but you are a very good actor. And he didn't have to tell me this. He's like, I want to apologize, but I want to tell you that I think you're really good at acting. You did a really good job.
So we're talking to Jared Bunch, former NFL star, now turned actor. Now, Jared, you also had another memorable role in a Snicker commercial, playing a guy with big ears, and you were a little afraid to fight.
As a matter of fact, when that fight happened, when Mike Tyson fought Evander Holyfield and he bit Evander Holyfield's ear, we were shooting the Don King story, and that scene was not in the movie, but the director had went to Las Vegas that weekend, watched the fight, came back on Monday, and decided we're putting this in the movie, and they put it in the movie, and then about a year later, an audition for a commercial for Snickers came up, and when I went in, I brought gloves, I brought boxing equipment, I brought in everything, and when they booked me for it, then they told me they were bringing in the trainer, Mike Tyson's old trainer, Kevin Rooney.
Mm-hmm.
So it became a big. A big memorable commercial. It was a good one.
So you're now a very established actor. You had a successful athletic career. Compare and contrast the differences between someone who certainly every day is one of the common themes, I guess, in your professional life is every day you have to reprove yourself. You're only as good as the last movie you made. When you were playing, you were only as good as the last block or run you made.
Yeah. I think it's life, man. That is what that's the way I see it. That is the way life is. And, you know, when we get to a level of professional sports, it's a level that a lot of people want to be, a level that a lot of people want to achieve, but a lot of people don't. So in life, a lot of people make mistakes, and a lot of people learn from mistakes and do things differently, and, you know, they move on. In acting, it's the same way. You have to if something works, great. If it doesn't work, you got to fix it. Start doing something else. Try to switch it up, move it around. But you have to keep on. The point of the whole thing is you can't give up. You got to keep trying, man. You know, you just got to keep on trying to do something. You got to keep trying to do something. It's when you stop, that's when you have the problems. And in acting, it's so evident that it's not about if you're going to win. It's about when you're going to win. Are you going to stay
right
in the game long enough to win? And that's it.
Now, you're a guy who appeared in a lot of different roles, both on the small and large screen. You actually were in one of my favorite movies, The Best Man, and I really didn't notice it. But when I saw your picture again, I realized that I think you were either one of the groomsmen or I think you were the friend of Lance, I believe, in that movie.
That's right, yeah. Actually,
out of all the roles that you've done, which one was your favorite? And that might be a hard question to narrow it down,
it's a hard one. But, you know, I had fun with all of them, you know. I had fun with all of them, and large and small. And one that I just did, there's a new show called Roselli and Isles, and it comes on TNT. And last week I was guest starring on that. That comes on TNT on Monday nights. And it just so happens that the star of the show is married to Jason Sehorn. So,
okay.
Yeah. So that was a fun one. If you get a chance, you can watch that show, Brazilian Eyes. And my episode was called I Kissed a Girl. But that was a fun one. Of course, the Don King in playing George Foreman, I think that was just one of those. I loved it. You know, it was. I play the icon. The guy's still living. The guy's his life story right now is one that many professional athletes wish they had. I mean, he was a guy
right
that was in boxing, the heavyweight champion, stopped for 10 years or more, came back and became the heavyweight champion again. And then after he stops, he makes more money than combined all of his boxing careers by with a grill.
And then that's kind of like you on some respect, because I was reading a New York Times article about you, and you were saying that you're through with your football money. You're just living now off your acting money.
It's gone, man. The football money's gone. Yeah, you know, and I think what that is you have to come up with something else. You know, I had to come up.
Does it go that fast?
Brother. You think that all these players that go from, you know, hero to zero, you think that's a coincidence or something? No. People, when you start off young, players start off young, and you see that you sign a contract for $10 million, $10, $20, $30, $40 million or whatever, you think.
50 now, you're talking Sam Bradford money.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, but Paul and Jared, I'm a CPA by trade, and I've represented professional athletes, and I've told Paul on several occasions, we broke this down, and I think you can certainly, you know, kind of go man-to-man and tell Paul. I said, you know, with the tax rates and the agent making 15% of the gross, the $10 million whittles itself down to about $4
million. $4 million, yes.
And that... And that's tough for people to understand, because here you have a 21. You're talking in most professional sports. Baseball is a really good example, because these are 18-year-old kids, and you're 8 years old, 21, 22 years old, 18, 22. The first thing people think about is what they see, you know, until they got to be 18, which is big home, big car, boat, and a vacation home, car for mom, car for dad, home for mom, home for dad. And if you're lucky today to not have a kid and a girlfriend, you're like one in a million. And at $4 million, In today's market, that's going to last you 4 years.
Yeah. What? Yeah, yeah. Well, okay. Yeah. Now, you said he said $4 million, right? But that's if you live in, like, you know, you got $10 million, but it's only four. But if you got $10 million and you think that you're going to get $10 million and you live like you got $10 million, it may not last 4 years.
Well, that's what I tell. That's what I've been saying, and I think it's so. And you raise a really a very astounding point, and I think it's very commendable for someone like yourself to reach the plateau in professional athletes and be, you know, and to be a steady working actor. And I'm sure you could go on for days about making people aware how many you go on, you've made movies, you've been in TV shows, but how many callbacks you didn't get, and how easy and tough, you know, it is to walk away, but to recognize, like you said, every day you have to be able and willing and ready to reinvent yourself.
Gotta be willing. That's it. That's the thing.
And he definitely was the guy who did that.
I can tell you, I remember where the turning point that for me that I had to say, okay, I know I got to do it. There was a movie called Any Given Sunday. I'm sure you guys heard of it.
Mm-hmm.
When I just finished with the Raiders, the doctor who wrote the book, it's only a bruise. Don't worry, it's just a bruise. He had just left the Raiders. So I was aware of the book, and then I was aware that someone had bought the rights to the book to do the movie. So all this time I'm following what's going to happen with this movie, what's going to happen with this movie. And then finally, Oliver Stone bought the rights, and Oliver Stone was going to do the movie. So I'm calling around, getting around, and then I had an audition for the role of the running back. And they brought me in, read for it, waited for like 2 or 3 weeks. I'm like, okay. Then were going to bring me back. And then, boom, LL Cool J, they signed LL Cool J to do it. So they called me and said, listen, we're going to bring you in for another role. And it just so happened that next day I was over at Lawrence's house. He had he was having a barbecue. And Lawrence Taylor, yeah. He's like, hey, Bunch,
okay.
did they call you about some movie? They called me, asked me to come in to read for some movie tomorrow. I'm like, what movie? He's like, I don't know. It's with Oliver Stone. I was like, Any Given Sunday? He's like, yeah. I said, so what part you reading for? He's reading for the same part that I'm reading for. So I go in the next day, and I see Oliver, and Oliver ain't paid attention to me at all. Ain't listening, nothing. And then he's like, oh, you surprised to see Lawrence out there? I'm like, not really. I was just over his house yesterday. He's like, oh, you know him? I said, yeah, we were teammates. He's like, oh, you used to play football? I'm like, oh, my goodness. Yeah. Right. Yeah, okay. So I leave. Lawrence goes in, and of course, you know, Lawrence got the part. So when I went back home, I said, I cannot believe that for almost 2 years I followed trying to get this part. And the opportunity when it came in, I didn't even get, like, really a real look, you know. And if I didn't even get that part, I used to play for the team of the doctor who wrote the book. Isn't there something in there for me? I used to play professional football. Isn't there something in for me? I'm an actor that has been doing this acting thing for a couple few years. Isn't there something in there for me? There was not. They gave me nothing. And I was like, are you all this time I'm spending for trying to get this part in this movie, and I got zero? I couldn't.
So,
I was like, oh, wow. So that now, at that point there, I was like, I have to start reinventing myself. I can't just wait for the football role,
right,
or the sports role, whatever. I have to be able to do other things, and
right,
that's where it is.
And it's just like football. You got to be able to block. Sometimes you got to be a pass catcher out the backfield, and
yes,
so you have to do other things.
The more things you can do, the harder it is for them to get rid of you. That's what we always say.
Right. So what's next for you now?
Well, like I said, the Brazilian Isles, that came out last week, and then now this week I'm working on a couple of projects that's the thing with this, you know, you haven't signed any contracts, you don't have nothing really, but there's a couple of projects that are on the table that I'm trying to make sure that I can get when I do, I would be so happy, you know, so happy. But I'm always trying for something. I'm always working on something. The production company that I have, we're always working on sports projects for commercials, for viral, you know, for different things to put out there.
Well, Jared, we definitely thank you for stopping by, sir. It was good to hear your story and see what's going on with you now. And we're happy that everything is going well with you. And when you make that big announcement about the big next role, then you need to come on by and we need to talk about it.
I have your number, and I will make sure to give you a call. Be sure to call.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Talk to you later.
Take care.
All right, bye.
That was Jared Bunch, a guy who made the transition from athlete to actor. And, it was an interesting story he had there. And, we hope and wish him nothing but the best, but he was a guy who prepared for life after football, and he did it well, and it's good for him, and he's a decent actor, and he's been in some decent roles, and, you know, we wish him nothing but the best. Now, we're going to move to another athlete who made that same transition. Former Eagle, former Redskin wide receiver, Darnarian McCann. Darnarian, how are you, sir?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good, man. What's happening?
No, not too much.
Can you hear me?
There we go.
Y'all got me in there?
Yeah, there we go.
Okay.
Now, Darnarian, you're a guy, you're from the Baltimore area. You were a guy who was drafted out of Delaware State and went to the Redskins. How was it being able, since you were in the Maryland, D.C. area, how was it being drafted by the Washington Redskins?
It was awesome, man. You know what I'm saying? It was perfect because, you know, didn't have to leave my environment. So right around the corner from everybody and everybody I knew and loved. So it was pretty ideal. You know, most guys who get drafted don't get the option.
And you were fortunately you got the option and you were able to make something of yourself and go to Washington. Now that first year in Washington, you were inactive for most of the year. Were you getting a little impatient when you were inactive and you weren't playing?
Say it again. It's like y'all been to an echo now.
I'm sorry. The first year in Washington in 2001, you didn't get a lot of looks. And did you get a little frustrated that you weren't able to get on and get into the games?
Nah, man. My coach, Richard Mann, he was probably one of my most straight-up coaches I've ever met. You know, I've only probably run into three coaches in the NFL that's actually told me the truth from the beginning. And basically, when I got drafted and they brought me in, he said, hey, D-Mac, this is what we're going to do. He said, basically, you're going to be redshirted. And, you know, coming from the situation I came from for Delaware State, to be redshirted in the NFL, you really can't sit and complain. You know, I'm getting a full check. I'm not on the practice squad. You know, it really wasn't too much else to do but just get better.
And did you get better? Did you feel like you got better?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Because the thing about it, coming from a 1AA black college, the education of the game. And I'm pretty sure any black college athlete could tell you, the education of the game is completely different. Rolling coverages, stunts, dogs, blitzes, all that stuff isn't really, at least when I was in school, wasn't taught. You know, black college, we got some of the best athletes in the world, but I wouldn't say we fought as football smart because we're going off our natural talent. I knew my senior year I was the biggest, fastest, strongest thing on the field. Now, as far as football smarts, I wouldn't say I was that educated just due to the fact when I put my head down and ran and looked up, it was the same cover too. You know, teams didn't roll coverages, teams didn't cloud coverage or camouflage coverages the way they do once you get to the league.
Now, you're a guy in 2003. That was sort of your breakout year with the Redskins. You had 27 catches. Six of those were for touchdowns. What do you think was the key to your success that season?
Coach Spray, he threw me the ball. it's not hard. It's all about getting the opportunity, man. The one thing people fail to realize, you know, even in JC's situation, and I'm talking about Jason Campbell, it's just about getting the opportunity. You know, I feel for JC because it's very similar to myself. Every year in my high school career, I had a new coach. Every year in my college career, I had a new coach. Every year in my pro career, I had a new coach. So it's like, who can you, what, you know, you're building a house on quicksand. You know, every
right.
year I knew guys coming in, so it's like, okay, well, we want our guys. And that's pretty much how the NFL is. You know, you don't have too many black college coaches running around the NFL. So you're not going to have too many black college kids staying in one area, but you got the SEC. You got the
you use a great example in a former on the same team with Jason Campbell, and you mentioned how and that organization in and of itself has year in and year out cyclically gone through coaches and players and for a player, whether they're drafted first round or drafted from a little known college, it's interesting to hear your perspective on how traumatic it is, just, you know, for the whole team and for the individual player from a fan perspective. You're saying that it's hard to get a hold of the, like, the mission, because every year everything changes. One year you're a passing offense, next year you're a running offense.
Right. You know, like I say, you're trying to build a foundation on sand. You know, until you got that rock, like such as a Pittsburgh, such as a Patriots, such as any team that you can name that's been to the playoffs the last 10 years, and it's pretty much the same 4 to 5 teams each year because they have their nucleus. They have their main quarterback. They have their number one receiver. They have their running back. Now, other
right.
guys you can kind of manipulate, and I mean, I'm not putting past the line, too. In fact, the line doesn't have too many names, but I'm pretty sure they keep that same line as much as possible, you know, because the NFL people, you know, the glorified positions are the skilled guys, but, shoot, if you ain't got that tackle to tackle, brother, you're going to be in some trouble.
Now, you were the Redskins brought into a new coaching staff, and you were let go by the team. Being a Maryland guy, were you disappointed about the Redskins letting you go?
Yeah, I was disappointed because actually that was the first time I've ever been cut in my life. So, you know, I mean, it was definitely a new traumatic experience. It's like, okay, we're not going to hold on to you. And I'm like, huh? It really didn't sink in till about maybe like a half hour. So they was like, yeah, get all your stuff and get out, and, you know, pretty much get out. And I was like, huh?
So was it kind of like, you're like, I'm Darnarian McCants, baby. I mean, you can't get rid of me. I've never been.
No, I've never been that type dude, but it's just like, you know, they sell you the dream of, okay, you work hard, you play hard, you do everything the coach asks you to, and, you know, everything will be all right. But in reality, it's all business. You know what I mean? In reality, that was coming up with my third year. Snyder and them would have owed me $1 million. He wasn't going to pay a third guy $1 million. So, and that's what it boiled down to up in Philly as well. You
right.
know, I was free agent. You know, let's keep him. You know, he might be good, but if we cut this guy, we gonna owe him $3 million. So let's just
right.
cut the guy we own, you know, we can just give a quick kick in the pants to.
Well, now speaking of the Philadelphia opportunity, were you? They were coming off a Super Bowl in 2004, and you went to them in 2005. Were you kind of happy with the opportunity of possibly playing with a Super Bowl contending team?
Oh yeah,
or did it really matter?
It was awesome because I've never been on the winning squad.
Right.
And with my football career, I won my senior year at Arundel High, and I won my senior year at Delaware State. That was my only two winning seasons ever playing football. Because people
wow.
fail to realize I'm a basketball guy. So, you know, that when I say that lack there of knowledge, it truly was because I never really followed football. I was 100% a basketball guy. I played football because my boys played football. It's just fact. When it came down to scholarships, it was a lot easier to get a football scholarship. But, you know, you talking about Philadelphia Eagles coming to the playoffs, you know, and even still T.O. was there. I watched T.O. Now you get a chance to play with this guy. You know, it was awesome. But, you know, things happened the way it was. Never really, in my opinion, got an opportunity to really shine, even though, you know, Coach Harbaugh gave me opportunity on special teams. And, you know, those points aren't added up. But I was one of the top performers on special teams after, you know, the Redskins said, I wouldn't play special teams.
Now speaking of T.O., during that season, him and Godman had their little well-publicized problems. Did you get the sense that really affected the team?
Oh, hands down, because it personally threw me off because the part that, you know, I thought was very unprofessional, you know, between them both. It was like, no, they wouldn't say anything to each other when they were in person. You know, I thought it was very unclassy of, you know, Mr. Owens there, is that he would work hard and then say, okay, Donald, we got to get this, we got to get this, and then be on television like at 6 o'clock when we just got out of practice at 3, talking about, yeah, if we had so-and-so, this would happen. And I'm like, huh? I'm like, how you try to get better with a guy right here, and then you turn around and say, if we had this person, we'd be in a better situation. And I'm like, in my opinion, Donovan is probably the best quarterback I've ever played with. Mm-hmm. You know, people who criticize him, whatever, and I think it had a lot to do with being in Philly. But you talking about hands down, he's a franchise quarterback. He's the best I ran into personally.
Now, was the locker room really divided? Was it a T.O. faction and a Donovan faction?
From my perspective, considering I was coming outside, it really, T.O. is in there by himself, man. You know, Donovan is, he's everybody's guy. You know what I mean? Donovan really, you know, he's out there to have fun, man, and try to keep balling. T.O. had, like, you know, he had, I don't want to say people following him. People thought he was cool, whatever. But it was definitely Donovan's team all the way. It was kind of funny.
How uncomfortable was the locker room? And I kind of think what you said speaks volumes, that it was Donovan's team, but it was certainly T.O. Circus.
I think, like, once again, it was more blown up in the media than what was really going on at the facilities. I think, you know, it got to the point where they just had enough of him,
you know,
of what he was doing. But, you know, they knew what they was getting when they signed him.
Mm-hmm. Now, at the end of the 2005, you were released by the Eagles, and in 2007, you actually dropped an album, your first album, My First Seven. I actually listened to some of the album today, and I was quite impressed. There's a few songs that on the album. I mean, I'm an R&B guy, you know, and I like the song Lonely. I like, I think it was I Still Want It. I mean, there was a few tracks on there. I mean, that was an album that I would listen to. So I got to give you a lot of credit with that. But when did you decide that, you know, this football thing may not be working out for me? Now it's kind of time to go to the next thing. And when did you decide to go to that next thing?
In reality, I actually did the album in 2003. Basically, I had put myself on a bigger platform than what I was. Basically, I was feeling, okay, I was one of the leading scorers for for the Redskins, so I'm going to get that opportunity to, you know, be more of a, you know, a role player. And I figured once I get that, I can cross-brand myself. So I'm in the business mindset myself. You know, the year before I had put out a lot of my artwork and people was asking about the artwork and wanted to see it and, you know, had some stuff in different places, posted up. So then it was like, okay, I can cross brand myself. I'm more of an artist, you know, as far as the marketing stuff, you know, I didn't really have any shoes. Shoe contracts weren't coming. The big name contracts weren't coming. So I figured, okay, if I get an opportunity to get more visibility, then I can use my artistic ability to, you know, to cross brand myself. So I did the album thinking, okay, 2004, I'm gonna be that boy. I'm gonna have my album, have my artwork spinning, and I'm just going to touchdowns. Nobody gonna be able to touch me, you know. But God had other plans. But I could always sing, man. It was just about, you know, Jimmy Ray told the team one time, he was like, "There's no sin in having talent. The sin is when you don't display, you know, the talents you have that God has given you, and you shame God for giving you these talents." And once he said it, like, it was like church, man. It was something just hit me, and I was like, you know what? I haven't sang, or people don't even know I can really sing, you know, in a long time. So then, you know, that's when I decided, you know, I had a couple dollars. Let me see what I can do, put the album together.
Now, you are a man of many talents, as you stated. Talk about, and I was looking at your website, and I saw a lot of your artwork. Tell us about you, the artist.
The artist. I'm a political prisoner, man. You know, as an athlete, you can't say a lot of things, as you can see. When you say certain things, people of higher power put you in a tough position to live a life.
Right.
So through my artwork, I express myself. So I can say a million words and not say nothing at all. So that's pretty much what my artwork, a lot of my artwork stem from. Most of my artwork that's on my site actually was from my college. At the time, I was learning a lot about Black history, which I didn't know. The area I grew up in, my parents, nobody ever taught me about it. So once I got the information, it opened a whole new world, in my opinion. So that's what I put on paper. You know, or better yet, I put in acrylic, I put in oil, you know, I put in watercolor, and displayed it. So that, you know, I've always got stuff going on, man, and, you know, the way the world is crazy, and I feel there should be more of a moral value than, you know, financial value. But you know what? It's not my world, so.
Well, money,
you know,
money unfortunately makes the world go round, and
yep.
A lot of greed out here, and unfortunately that leads to the society that we have today.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you tried to make one final comeback back in 2008 with the Ravens.
Mm-hmm.
You were actually cut kind of late in camp. You signed kind of late in camp, but you were actually cut. You signed, I think you signed in July. You were cut in August.
Yeah.
So when you were cut, were you surprised that you were cut, or did you kind of expect it?
No, I really didn't expect it because at that point in time, I was actually behind Derek Mason. So, you know, only reason I was there is because of Coach Harbaugh. So, once again, like I said, Coach Harbaugh was probably another one of the coaches that was just straight up with me. When I was in Philly, he said, look, if you don't make the special teams, you're going to be cut. So, you know, obviously I made special teams. So, you know, I think at that level, if you are level with a man, he can accept it. At least I know I could. You know, if you tell me the truth, said, okay, they used to tell me, McCants, you're on the bubble. Coach McMahon, you're on the bubble, McCants. Hey, you need to step it up. You need to do this. We had to let you go. And that was pretty much what, you know, Coach Harbaugh, it was kind of a funny situation. They brought me in to a training camp, doing a couple mini camps, and then I didn't hear anything. So in reality, I'm like, you're hitting them from the NFL, you know, you might as well just cancel it. So I'm like, okay, I'm really trying to get a job. And then the day of training camp, I get a call. And he's like, yeah, you in shape? And I'm like, yeah. Yeah, I'm in shape, all right. So when I got there, I think my natural ability, my talent took over, even though it was still some rust that needed to be knocked off. I think, you know, I could have helped him out. But basically, I just kept getting a little knick-knack injuries, man.
Right.
Every week, something was going on. First game, I'm the leading receiver, and I'm out with a concussion. So, you know, they
wow.
still gave me kudos for that, and I still was, you know, in the mix. Second game, I broke my toe. Didn't know I was broke, but I kept going, and, they, you know, I didn't get any film. In the NFL, when you don't get film, you don't get a job. So by the third game, I think I did something to my elbow or my shoulder. Something else was going crazy, man. So it pretty much let me go. But, you know, Coach Harbaugh was straight up with me, and I knew what was going on. When you don't get any film, you don't get a job. And, you know, I wish they really would have called me towards, like, middle season when Mason was hurt because, you know, they kept all those big guys, and I never heard their names. And I was like, dude, where are all these guys that they brought in? They're not even playing. You know, Derek Mason out there with one arm. And I'm like, come on, man. So, but, you know, I probably should have made a couple phone calls, but at the same time, you know, I think it's just to the point where it was time for me to move on.
So now what's going on with Darnarian McCants now? What's new with him? What's going on? What do you have to promote? Let's put it out there. We've got about a minute left.
A minute left? Okay. iTunes. Find me on iTunes. Everything is under my first name. People always look for Darnarian McCants. I go by my first name when it comes to my music. So if you can spell
okay.
Darnarian or come close, iTunes, you'll find my second album called A Piece of Me. I just finished the web series with Southeast Boys Productions. Check for that. It's called Anacostia. I play a pimp. I'm coaching at South Lakes High School, a receiver coach. So I think I might have two products coming out of South Lakes that might just go Division I. So, that's pretty much what's going on. Photography. I got a photography business that I started called Mac Vision Photography. What else? I think that's it. Maybe. Yeah. Oh, and I'm a personal trainer, so.
There you go.
Yeah, you can find me on Facebook. I'm everywhere, man. Just look for the first name. They can find me.
Spell the name.
Spell it. It's D-A-R-N-E-R-I-E-N.
Darnarian, we thank you for stopping by, sir. It was greatly appreciated. We definitely got to do it again.
Just let me know, and I'll hit you up. Appreciate you.
All right, sir. Take care.
Take care.
All right, thanks. Later.
Well, that's our show for today. See you next week on Go Forth. Bye.